Penguin Audio presents Spook Country by William Gibson. Read by Robertson Dean. February 2006. 1. White Lego.
"Roush," said the voice in Hollis Henry's cell.
"Node,"
it said. She turned on the bedside lamp, illuminating the previous evening's empty can of Asahi Draft from the pink dot and her sticker-encrusted power book, closed and sleeping. She envied it.
"Hello, Philip."
Node was her present employer, to the extent that she had one, and Philip Roush, her editor. They'd had one previous conversation, the one which had resulted in her flying to L.A. and checking into the Mondrian. But that had had much more to do with her financial situation than with any powers of persuasion on his part. Something in his intonation of the magazine's name just now, those audible italics, suggested something she knew she'd quickly tire of. She heard Odile Richard's robot bump lightly against something from the direction of the bathroom.
"It's 3 there," he said. "Did I wake you?"
"No,"
she lied. Odile's robot was made of Lego, white Lego exclusively, with some odd number of black-tired white plastic wheels underneath and what she assumed were solar power cells screwed across its back. She could hear it moving patiently, however randomly, across the carpet of her room. Could you buy white-only Lego? It looked right at home here, where lots of things were white. Nice contrast with the Aegean blue table legs.
"They're ready to show you his best piece," Roush said.
"When?"
"Now.
She's waiting for you at her hotel. The Standard."
Hollis knew the Standard. It was carpeted in royal blue astroturf. Whenever she went there, she felt as though she were the oldest living thing in the building. There was a sort of giant terrarium behind the registration desk in which ethnically ambiguous bikini girls sometimes lay as if sunning themselves, or studying large, profusely illustrated textbooks.
"Have you taken care of the billing here, Philip? When I checked in, they still had it on my card."
"It's been taken care of."
She didn't believe him.
"Do we have a deadline on this story yet?"
"No."
Roush sucked in his teeth, somewhere in a London she couldn't be bothered imagining.
"The launch has been rolled back. August."
Hollis had yet to meet anyone from Node, or anyone else who was writing for them. A European version of Wired, it seemed, though of course they never put it that way. Belgian money, via Dublin, offices in London, or, if not offices, then at least this Philip, who sounded to her as though he were 17. 17, and with his sense of humor surgically excised.
"Plenty of time,"
she said, not certain what she meant, but thinking, however obliquely, of her bank balance. "She's waiting for you."
"Okay."
She closed her eyes and clamshelled her phone. Could you, she wondered, be staying in this hotel and technically still be considered homeless? It felt like you could, she decided. She lay there under a single white sheet, listening to the French girl's robot bumping and clicking and reversing. It was programmed, she supposed, like one of those Japanese vacuum cleaners, to keep bumping until the job was done. Odile had said it would be collecting data with an onboard GPS unit. Hollis guessed it was. She sat up, a very high thread count sliding to her thighs. Outside, wind found her windows from a new angle. They thrummed scarily. Any very pronounced weather here worried her. It got written up, she knew, in the next day's papers, like some lesser species of earthquake. 15 minutes of rain and the lower reaches of the Beverly Center pancaked. House-sized boulders coasted majestically down hillsides into busy intersections. She'd been here for that, once. She got out of bed and crossed to the window, hoping she wouldn't step on the robot. She fumbled for the cord that opened the heavy white drapes. 6 floors below, she saw the palms along Sunset thrashing, like dancers miming the final throes of some sci-fi plague. 3:10 on a Wednesday morning, and this wind seemed to have the strip utterly deserted. "Don't think,"
she advised herself. Don't check your email. Get up and go into the bathroom. 15 minutes later, having done the best she could with all that had never been quite right, she descended to the lobby in a Philippe Stark elevator, determined to pay its particulars as little attention as possible. She'd once read an article about Stark that said the designer owned an oyster farm where only perfectly square oysters were grown in specially fabricated steel frames. The doors slid open on an expanse of pale wood. The platonic ideal of a small oriental carpet was projected across part of this from somewhere overhead, stylized squiggles of light recalling slightly less stylized squiggles of dyed wool. Originally intended, she remembered having been told, to avoid offending Allah. She crossed this quickly, heading for the entrance doors.